Cat.
I'll give credit to Stuart.
Thank you. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Today is Thursday, March the 17th, 2005, and we welcome all of you here today. We would like very much to honor our military and all who have served our nation and our efforts to preserve our precious freedom, and would like to ask you to stand now if you've served in our military so we can honor you. We are most grateful for your service, and we'll never take it for granted that freedom is free, because we know it isn't and wasn't. Thank you for being here. This morning we'd like to ask, first of all, I'd like to thank our administrator here for making St. Patrick's Day cookies, and we will share. And we are impressed, Mr. Stembridge, their walnut chocolate chip Toll House cookies and the date of them. 2001, you made them then, that year? Just in case we ever had this committee.
I was trying to reassure you that I am capable of doing things.
So oh, nice. If you didn't hear him, he's trying to assure us that he's capable of doing something. You've done a lot, and Aaron, we appreciate both of you very much. I'd like to ask Colonel Caldwell to come forward this morning, because today is another great day in certainly in the life of our Oregon National Guard, because something important happened this morning at 6:30, and we'd like the colonel to tell us what happened and go from there. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director at the Military Department. And that the committee administrator, Mr. Stembridge, only made six or seven cookies, I guess. I think I'd be real careful if I were you. Unless you get a taster. But this morning, the first lift of our 2nd Battalion, 162nd Infantry, did arrive at Fort Lewis from Kuwait after a year in Iraq. The rest of them will be coming steadily through the next 24 to 48 hours, depending on the airflow. And we anticipate to have them all back on U.S. soil by tomorrow night.
And there's 700 total?
Just shy of that. I think the total number is around 650, 648, something like that right now is the total number.
We are so very proud of all of you, and certainly of them, and I'm sure it's a great week for those families and communities that are welcoming them home.
Absolutely, and I'd like to certainly invite everybody of this committee and anybody else that's within earshot that on the 31st at 1600, 4 o'clock, we're gonna have a return ceremony for them for the 2162 here in Salem.
4:30 on the 31st.
Friday the 31st. And we'll be sending out a flyer all members of the legislature to make sure that
it's a Thursday.
31st, yeah. And the governor will be there. We've gotten tentatives from several of the congressional delegations, depending on their scheduling and their break and everything else. But clearly, we would love to have all of this committee in attendance and any of your colleagues that want to make it over to the fairgrounds. We chose to have it here, even though they're from Eugene, Cottage Grove area, because this is where we're out processing them, and so that'll be their last day of out processing. And we needed a facility that we anticipate a fairly large crowd.
Oh, it's going to be at the fairgrounds?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It'll be at the fairgrounds here in Salem at their new building that holds around 5,000 people, and we're anticipating we're going to need every chair that we have, given what we've been picking up through different sources. So we truly invite you then.
Well, we're certainly going to look forward to that. Thursday, March 31st, 4:30 at the fairgrounds here in Salem, and this will be our formal welcome home for our 162nd Infantry.
Yes, ma'am.
And certainly hope all our veterans come, and I look forward to seeing the motorcycle veterans. They always amaze me that they come from all points of the state to be here. Could you briefly tell us what is the process of decompressing, and so we can let the tell the press what is happening to them if they.
Yes, ma'am. I would probably defer to Colonel Boquist, who's probably done it more than anybody here. But in this case, in that this is a fairly large group of people, there are certain processes that have to be accomplished before they can be released from federal active duty. Some of that is to determine whether or not they have any injuries, any illnesses, or any service-related injuries that would qualify them for other issues, whether they be medical evaluation boards, VA benefits, et cetera, et cetera. Also, they'll have briefings on reintegration, on what to expect and some of the pitfalls and some of the lessons learned from previous soldiers, both active and reserve components, that have come home, and that's an important piece of this thing. And then most importantly is getting the paper straight. The two systems do not mesh.
The federal system.
The guard system. They're all federal systems. They just don't mesh.
Federal systems that don't mesh.
Right.
Well, we're aware of that now in this committee.
That doesn't surprise anyone, does it?
Yeah, no, it's certainly not. And
we need to have a reconnect.
That's correct. And then there's, of course, convert them back over when they come back to Salem, which will be about 5 to 6 days. They'll come back to Salem. We'll billet them here, or they can stay at home. But they will be required to come to duty each day because they're still on federal active duty, and then we will also reintegrate them or re-plug them back into the guard system for pay and benefits, because that doesn't happen automatically. That's a physical act that has to take place, and so we will plug them all back in. We'll try to capture any issues that they have at that point and document those, so if there is anything further that comes, you know, 6 months down the road, then we have documentation that it happened when they were on federal active duty. That's an important piece. At the same time, we've got a committee that we put together, a group of reintegration team that includes Veterans Affairs, both ODVA, federal VA, NCO groups, VFWs, those sort of things, will all be involved in this reintegration process and set up stations, include everything from employment, education, soup to nuts, basically. And we've been working on that since November, and we've got a pretty robust committee, including mental health folks, VA mental health folks, local folks, counties, and everybody else. So we're going to have that group there as well to help reintegrate these soldiers and their families back into civilian life. So it's
one week in Fort Lewis, and then they have another week here.
Yes, ma'am.
And then they all return to their home sites and their jobs.
Yes, ma'am.
So that
they have they will be still on active duty for federal orders will end. I'm not precise on this, but typically between 30 and 60 days they will still be on federal active duty. They can return to their jobs. By law, they have to be back in 30 days after they're released from federal active duty. We've had soldiers that have taken that entire time, 30, 60, 90 days, whenever 30 days post their release date. We've had soldiers that have gotten home the minute they hit the ground and they start working. So I think it's an individual kind of a choice, depending on what their relationship is with their employer and what their needs, their special needs may be with respect to their families. And we've had young men and women return to school as soon as they can. Like, we have the break coming. You'll probably see kids that will re-enroll in school this spring term. So they'll go right from the frying pan to the fire. Or from the fire to the frying pan, maybe in this sense.
Been the same one. Well, we would certainly be honored if the members of the 162nd should choose to come to our committee meeting on that day. That morning, we would love it, and we'd also love to be able to introduce them in our house session. So if you would relay that for those who may be here, we would be highly honored.
I'll make a note of that and see if we can arrange that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today we are really honored to have the Native American veteran organizations here, and we have so much appreciation and respect for the participation of our various tribes, and are most grateful. So at this time I'll ask Justin Martin to come forward and Leo Stewart, and I believe we have Buddy West.
Maybe others.
Justin, why don't you come forward to.
You want us to go?
Go ahead.
We'll be pretty brief. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grande Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. And I'm also pleased to introduce to you today Wesley Buddy West, one of our newest tribal council members and also a proud veteran. We'd like to talk today briefly about a few general statistics about American Indians in the military, our proud history, and then have you guys hear from Wes specifically about his experience as a veteran. The Confederated Tribes of Grande Ronde are about a 5,000-member tribe located 35 miles west of Salem. Originally, 26 bands were moved to the Grande Ronde Reservation on a 69,000-acre reservation. Over time and through several acts of Congress, those lands dwindled until ultimately termination in the 1950s, in which the tribe was left with a 2.5-acre parcel, the tribal cemetery. It took another 29 years and another act of Congress, the Grande Ronde Restoration Act of 1983, in which the tribe was restored in name only. It then took another 5 years and the Grande Ronde Reservation Act of 1988 before some lands were restored back to the tribe. That was about 10,000 contiguous acres. And today we have been very successful, not only with our own tribal membership, but within our community. And again, we're very proud that we were asked to be here today. In front of you, you see some statistics, some general statistics about American Indians and their involvement over the course of history. American Indians have participated with distinction in the United States military for more than 200 years and have served in every war fought by the U.S. It was estimated that more than 12,000 American Indians served in the United States military during World War I. Over 44,000 American Indians out of a total population of less than 350,000 served during World War II, and over 42,000 American Indians, more than 90% of them volunteers, served during Vietnam. It's a proud fact that American Indians have the highest record of service per capita when compared to other ethnic groups. Obviously, we're very proud of our service and very proud to have Wes with us here today. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for being here. And Wes, we're so grateful for your service, and thank you for being here. If you just identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for allowing me to be here today. Like Justin said, my name is Buddy West, and I grew up right outside of Hood River in a little town called Odell. At that time, we were poor. And there was not a lot of opportunities for a young man at that time, especially a poor young Native American. Our options were you either worked in the woods as a logger or you joined the service. So I opted to join the service. At that time, our tribe had just been terminated, and we were slowly losing our culture and our language. So the military became my family and my tribe, and I stayed in and retired after 20 years. My unit was 101st Airborne Division. I served 3 years in Vietnam. I was wounded in 1968 at Tet Offensive, and I returned to serve another tour after that. I received an email yesterday from the Indian Health Service, and they stated that of the 240,000 Native Americans who served in Vietnam, 90% of them were volunteer. And they credited that with their loyalty, pride, honor, wisdom, and dedication. And I got to thinking, that is not a unique to Native Americans. That describes all veterans. And I get a little choked up.
Well, we do too.
I'm proud of my unit. and I'm proud of who I served with. And like I say, they were my family for 20 years. Excuse me, man.
That's all right.
When I returned, things had changed. Our tribe was reinstated, and we started getting our culture and our language back. And I met, we had a group of veterans, and that's just what I needed. And you will never find a more compassionate or dedicated group than our veterans. If you ever get a chance, you go up there and you see that memorial they built.
Oh, it's awesome. I have been there.
And it's got the list of all the names, not only Native American, but all of the veterans in the nine-county area. And they do so much and have served so much, and they don't get anything. They don't receive anything. They don't ask for anything. Their reward is serving. And I'm proud of them.
Well, we
and when you look at that memorial and you look at the names on that wall and you watch and you see our veterans honor guard post the colors,
yes,
and you listen to the taps and your chest puffs out and your heart beats fast and it gets them goosebumps. And it's because of the pride you have in our vets, the service they're given to their country, and they're still serving. Thank you.
Well, we thank you. We are so grateful. That memorial is just awesome. Who constructed that?
The veterans, they done it through fundraising.
Themselves?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, I mean, it is just spectacular. Mm-hmm. And long time coming, but
right.
It's always better to have it now than never.
Right.
And it is wonderful, and everyone should see it there.
Thank you.
We're just also we're grateful to the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round for all they've done in many ways in our communities. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I represent the Confederated Tribe of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Good morning, and thank you for taking the time to listen to some of the Tribes of Oregon's issues with Veterans Affairs. Today I have with me from Umatilla, Leah Stewart, the Vice Chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Confederated Tribe of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Leah is also a veteran of the U.S. Army and is here to inform you of some of the tribe's veterans' issues.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelsey. We're grateful for you being here, too. Thank you.
Tots Mallory, it's good morning. Madam Chair, I have something that was brought up with Mr. West. It was honored to have him service. As you know, as tribal people really respect their veterans in a mighty way, and they honor them in a lot of longhouses, and even on special occasions they recognize them with an honor dance, songs, and everything. And this is something that, you know, for him to spend that much time in the service is really a great ordeal. Because, you know, when I was as a veteran, I was drafted. And they said, "Oh, you're drafted?" I said, "Yes, I was drafted." But, you know, something had changed my life. You know, it changed my life. It made me look at responsibility. As you went in there, you lived on peanuts in the service, but then you learn to gain respect, you know, for other people and yourself. You know, come from a reservation or any forms of life, it changes you to some way. So I was in the Army, and I went to serve in Fort Rucker. I went as nobody that knew nothing about aviation, but I went over to became a crew chief.
All right.
And I worked on airplanes, and then after I started working on airplanes, I had the ability to start working on helicopters. And in that time, you never realize some of the self-education that they give you in there, that they help you to start lifting your head up high, because you know where I came was from the reservation, and I had a low opinion of myself. And after I got out, I looked for jobs. I had jobs, but then I started working with Pacific Northwest Bell, and I retired from there of 31 years. But see, this is the ability that the veterans, that the armed forces has given me. And so I'm just bringing that up because, you know, there's a lot to being a veteran and the appreciation mm-hmm. of what the services have done for us. I've been an elected official, and I put this as a... And now I'm elected official for the CTR, that's the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indian Reservation. And I've imposed a personal obligation upon myself to stay involved and advocate for the veterans' issues. Via letter, March 3rd of 2005, I was appointed a member of the Department of Veterans Affairs, a local advisory panel for the VA of Walla Walla campus study. My appointment will last through December of 2005. An expected expiration of the panel. This panel is one of the 12 local panels established for the capital assessment, realignment of enhancement services, business plan studies, sites, identified for additional study for the Veterans Cares Division. Document of May of 2004. In September of 2003, the CTR submitted a formal testimony of the CARES Commission at the Jonathan M. Wainwright VA Medical Center in Walla Walla, Washington. In it, they evidently opposed the closure of the Walla Walla facility and urged support for the building of a new facility in Walla Walla. On behalf of the current and future veterans in our region deserve the benefit to receive medical treatment as near their home as possible. And as the United States continues its military in foreign countries, and return home veterans are in need of medical, psychological, and substance abuse treatment, then it is only right that these veterans are allowed to receive medical attention as near to their home as possible.
Absolutely.
The veterans have already served the United States away from their homes and their loved ones in order to protect the integrity of our homeland. Individuals and families who have chosen to live in rural settings for the quality of life deserve equitable consideration for use and access to medical facilities near their homes as your urban veterans population does. The VA medical census in the Walla Walla is a set in preliminary and rural environment and provides decreased travel and lodging costs for families and visitors. We have some videos. We have our caretaker, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But in February of 2004, the CARES Commission submitted a report to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, recommending the closure of Walla Walla VA MC. after much local opposition and support from the Oregon and Washington congressional delegations. In May of 2004, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs announced his decision not to close the Walla Walla VA. And current LAP process is now in effect, and it took the CTR nearly 8 months of advocacy of getting me appointed as a representative of CTR and other tribal veterans and membership to the LAP. We are a unique population that receives cultural relevant service for our veterans in rehab at Walla Walla VA, which consists of sweat lodges and some of the spiritual means of helping them to get them back on their own course. And a lot of times we do have people in denial. And then when they get sick, that's when they come. But I wish they would come forward sooner. Because, you know, as tribal people, we don't feel that we need the help, but we could do it ourselves. And provide, well, or we will, again, have traveled away from their homes, take care of families and retain their employment. The initial of many rural communities is how to retain and recruit medical professionals. How has the CARES process worked with the Oregon Health Administrators to determine the ability of local providers to take over these services? How can we work together to make sure veterans in Oregon, in our case, northeastern and eastern Oregon, will receive their well-deserved medical and mental health services? I can't tell you with certainty at this time the number of veterans in the rural northeast Oregon, the decision on the Walla Walla VAMC will impact. I realize it is not limited to tribal veterans, but I urge you to find out in order for us to collaboratively seek support from our congressional delegation on their behalf with this administration. At the CTR, we retain a veteran service coordinator within our Department of Children and Family Services. Our coordinator is Allison McKinney. She's a non-Indian veteran of U.S. Army. Allison has been really involved with the provision of health service for our veterans. Allison has posed the following issues for the consideration today. Care needs for the World War veterans and soon Korean veterans will increase as multiple health care concerns befall them. There are also financial concerns that are particular to Native veterans. It is difficult to coordinate benefits that best benefits our veterans because the multiple agencies become involved and very different eligibility requirements. Native American elders prefer to stay on the reservation, close to home and their families and lifelong friends. Being able to provide a caregiver who is knowledgeable about cultural issues and that can be provided with assistance from all these agencies would be beneficial. Often, Native veterans do not apply for benefits with the military service, believing that all their tribal benefits will be enough. Post-trauma stress disorder is rarely recognized by the veteran himself because of the way this syndrome is presented to them. It is important that the culture and background of the Native veterans be considered when determining psychological wellness. For instance, a Native American may not feel extreme anger and consider suicide, but be withdrawn and be placed. That doesn't mean that he doesn't suffer from PTSD. His behavior may well be dedicated by his culture beliefs. As a tribe, we would have our cultural tradition healers that may need to be brought into in process, therefore lower the incidence of self-medication occurring. How can we, in coordination with the VA and ODAVA and the state Medicare system, be more proactive about providing elder care than just the veterans' home in the Dells? We suggest these issues that may be brought up for discussion in government-to-government process established through Senate Bill 770. Finally, recognize that the Native Americans have a high record of service per capita when prepared with other ethnic groups. In June of 1855, in the Walla Walla Valley, the CTOR, the Yakima Nation, and Nez Perce tribes signed these respective treaties with the United States government, reserving us for our homeland. Each of our tribes have enormous members serving in the military service and prior to 1924. Many are deceased veterans served without U.S. citizenship. But fighting to protect their homeland is extensive and necessary to maintain that tradition continues today. Therefore, we seek your support in calling upon the federal government to provide, call upon the Department of Veterans Affairs to adequately consult with us on the purpose of closure or the diminishment of service at the Walla Walla Medical Hospital. I have something when I went and worked on telephones, and I went out to the veterans' homes and talked to them, and they don't like to talk about the services that they rendered when they were and what they went through World War II and the Korean Wars. The injuries that they had, the silver medals that was provided to them with their heroism. They do not. He said, "This is what I've done." I said, "Why don't you?" He says, "No. I don't want nobody to know what I've done." And I wish that people would have brought these out, but I don't know why. Is it something that they keep within themselves to keep the trauma inside them? I don't know. We have to reach those people. They have to be reached somehow, because it keeps them isolated. And to share the things that they've gone through, the wars and the things the abilities they can do for the future veterans that come out, they could provide and help them to come back and to live within the community. We have alcoholism with our veterans. I see veterans walking up and down the road, as you see on the side of the roads here. They need money and stuff like this. So where are we going with our veterans? Where do we see this? Where's the end to this? You know, I always think of that. But I was drafted. But then yet I still served, you know, and I still think that some importance to all the things that the ones that voluntarily went in to give their lives to this nation and for other nations too. See, there's some place that we should open those doors and those opportunities for these people. So if you have any questions, please be free to ask. If I'm unavailable to answer them, I sure in the heck will take the notes down and get back to you. Because I just thank you for this honor to come before you today, and I really appreciate this time. Thank you.
We want you to know, Mr. Stritz, that this is our honor to have you here. We're so grateful for the service of all the tribal members of all of our tribes. And this is an issue that's been brought up, the Senate Bill 770. We've made note of this. I think we're going to need to talk about this more because somehow, in my opinion, you know, our tribal brothers and sisters are just as qualified to benefit from all of the veteran benefits as any individual would. And I don't know the process, but I am sad that there are individuals who may qualify to be in one of the homes or be in the medical facilities for treatment or rehabilitative programs, and we want to be sure that it's all inclusive, and we'll work on that.
And Madam Chair, too, there's one of the things I didn't bring up, too, is about the qualifications of the medical. The people that have been trained through the services, they have the understand trauma. They understand the psychology that the veterans have been afflicted. And when we get into the private sector, they don't understand this. They could give them all kinds of different kinds of medication and not get them the mental capabilities that will help them. And this is important for us to hear.
Absolutely.
Because you know, even in our wars, in the war today, we got a private sector pushing buttons for us. And so, you know, they can come back home anytime they want to. But our veterans have to stay over. I mean, our warriors have to stay over there and fight. So, you know, it's an unfair that they are really represented with the medical care and whatever benefits they could render. And I just appreciate it.
Well, we certainly appreciate your being here, and Mr. West, we're very grateful. And Ms. Wilson, and of course, Mr. Martin. Are there questions from the committee? Okay. We will continue to bring greater clarity to the benefits. We will do further research on the Walla Walla facility. We will work with our congressional delegation as is needed for all of our tribes. And we're grateful that you took the time to come here. And both of you, we really are honored, tremendously honored. And thank you for your service.
Yeah, we thank you, too, because, you know, that you take the time for us. And it's not all just for the natives. It's all veterans.
It's all veterans.
All veterans.
Every veteran. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I can certainly tell by the feeling of the atmosphere of this committee today that we're greatly touched by this testimony, and we thank you very much. Is there any other testimony for informational purposes today before we open a public hearing on some measures? Okay. I will close the informational meeting, and I will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2681. Mr. Administrator.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2681 requires school districts to issue high school diplomas to veterans who did not complete high school because of wartime military service since the Korean War and who request the diploma. This measure declares an emergency and becomes effective upon passage. This is a measure that was sponsored by the Committee on Veterans Affairs.
All right, regarding House Bill 2681, thank you very much. We will invite testimony at this time, public testimony. And Mr. McDonald, are you here to testify on House Bill 2681?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you come forward, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. I like the bill, except I think we need to make a couple of changes to improve it. On line 20, I think you need to include the dates of the Vietnam War, which would be 5 August 1964 to 7 May 1975. And I think we need to add a line 4B, and in that line put, served in the armed forces of the United States in a theater of operations which a campaign or expeditionary medal is authorized by the United States. And I think those two changes would help the bill.
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes, please.
On line 20, you will see that the language is bracketed, which would indicate that it's going to be removed.
It's going to be okay.
What the bill does is put these dates, rather than dates, it puts down general wars or conflicts, and that you'll see starting on line 23 and 24, World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, and the Vietnam War is then mentioned on line 28.
And then you go on to mention several other operations. I think you could add to that, which would cover all operations in the future, served in the armed forces of the United States in a theater of operations for which a campaign or expeditionary medal is authorized. That would cover future operations.
And, Mr. McDonald, are you suggesting that we delete these Operation Urgent Fury in Grenada, Operation Just Cause Panama, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the Persian Gulf War, Operation Restore Hope from Somalia, Operation Enduring Freedom Afghanistan, or Operation Iraqi Freedom in Iraq?
No, ma'am. You could keep that in there, but you're going to have future operations. I know this country has a history of where it protecting freedom, and if you put the amendment that I said in there, you won't have to have another bill in the future.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Are there questions on the committee?
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Any other testimony on House Bill 2681? I will therefore close the public hearing on House Bill 2681. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2687. Mr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2687 changes the definition of veteran in Oregon statute. It reduces from 180 to 178 the number of days of active military service required to qualify as a veteran. It includes persons who have served at least 30 days of active military duty in a president-designated combat zone within the definition of veteran.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in this bill...
Mr. McDonald, I'm sorry, you're going to have to identify yourself again.
My name is Matt McDonald, and I'm a represent veterans organizations. In House Bill 2687, we refer to dishonorable discharge in here.
That would be line 28.
We can line on line 24, 26, and 28. There are five discharges in the military: administrative, undesirable, bad conduct, dishonorable discharge, and I've forgotten what the other one is offhand. But I think it would be better if we said discharge under honorable conditions, and that would cover everything, because in this bill, the way this reads, I could have a bad conduct discharge and get privileges, or an undesirable discharge. But you can have an administrative discharge. The other discharge is a general discharge. A general discharge, administrative discharge, and a normal discharge can all be under honorable conditions. So I think if a discharge under honorable conditions would better suit this language of this bill than a dishonorable discharge.
Thank you. Is there any other any questions for Mr. McDonald? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you speak to your sense of the? I realize we're trying to include a category of folks who may not be at 180 days. Talk about 178 days versus 175, 179, 90. I mean, what's your view on the 178 days?
Well, the law reads right now 180 days, and I'm hoping that that gets changed or in combat. And I don't think there's anything we can do about it until the federal law really changes. You know, we're going to be there for that. But under 2B, I think it is, you could allow any day in combat zone to qualify a veteran. Eliminate the 30-day requirement would be probably a good fix, too.
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes, please.
I think Mr. McDonald is talking about line 27.
27.
Section 3A, capital C.
So this line would read, let me just go back up here, 2, 3. Veteran means a person who served on active duty with the armed forces of the United States for a period of more than 178 consecutive days and was discharged honorably. Or released honorably.
Discharged under honorable conditions. Or
under honorable conditions. Is it discharged or released under
honorable conditions? Or released under honorable conditions.
Honorable condition. And Part B would say, veteran means a person who served on active duty with the armed forces of the United States for 178 days or less and was discharged or released
under honorable conditions.
Under honorable conditions because of a service-connected disability.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And then
3C will read, for any day in a combat zone and was discharged or released from active duty under honorable condition.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
You're welcome.
Any other testimony on that bill, 2687? I'll now close the public testimony on House Bill 2687. We'll open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 6.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 6 is very similar to Senate Joint Memorial 6 from the 2003 session. It urges Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code to allow military veterans who served after December 31, 1976 to participate in Oregon's Home Loan for Veterans program.
Thank you. Paul and Paula Brown from the Department of Veteran Affairs to come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Joint Memorial 6, House Joint Memorial 6, sponsored by this committee. As was indicated, House Joint Memorial 6 urges the United States Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code to allow veterans who entered the armed forces of the United States after December 1976 to become eligible for Oregon home loans for veterans using the proceeds of qualified veterans' mortgage bonds. While the department's currently able to make home loans to veterans who served after 1976, it's from a different source of funds. And that source of funds is very limited. What we believe that this restriction creates is two classes of veterans, pre-77, post-76. House Joint Memorial 6 very eloquently describes how the men and women from Oregon have served and continue to serve loyally and bravely in defense of their country, and that making the necessary change to the federal tax code will make these loyal Americans who entered after 1976 eligible for home loans from the same pool of money as their comrades. Their comrades respect and honor them. Their comrades do not draw lines or make divisions among veterans. And quite frankly, neither should the federal tax code. The department anticipates the introduction of a bill this Congress that will make that necessary change. In the past, all of Oregon's congressional delegation has co-sponsored such bills, and they have pledged to do so this time, which we're very pleased to be able to report to this committee. House Joint Memorial 6 urges the United States Congress to take the necessary action and make the needed amendment. I thank you for sponsoring House Joint Memorial 6 and for allowing me to testify in support of this memorial. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. The questions of Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've probably seen our list. We have, 20, 25, 30 various memorials calling on Congress to do a variety of things, all of which are good and needed. If you were to prioritize the issues in terms of the impact on veterans in Oregon, would you put this in the top two or three of those, this particular issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I certainly would, because without this change to the Internal Revenue Code, the ability for this state to make home loans to veterans will cease to exist in a few years. So it's a very high priority, yes.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the members of the committee are aware of the issues that I want to raise with you, but I want to make certain that we've got it, that we understand it. What we're really talking about here, isn't it, is the ability of some veterans to obtain home loans at all and the ability of others to do so at a reasonable cost. Isn't that really what we're talking about? Because the Veterans Home Loan Program is able to provide low interest rate loans that commercial banks and so forth are unable to provide.
And Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, let me just clarify a couple things. Let me try to answer it, and then you let me know if I've done a good job at that or not. When we look at the two different classes of veterans, the pre-77 and the post, or pre-77, post-76, I got that right. What we're looking at is the funds that we can use to make those home loans. So we can only use the qualified veterans mortgage bonds, which are tax-free bonds, to make home loans to the pre-77. Post-76, we have to use pre-Almond bond refundings, which are a more limited source and certainly would also cease to exist after a certain period of time. So all of those veterans are able to get a home loan currently. However, it's from a different pool of monies. Now, how important is it to get those the qualified veterans mortgage bonds and use those proceeds? It certainly allows the department to offer the low interest rate home loans, which was the purpose of the program in the 1940s. And you're absolutely right. Without the ability to continue to do that, the cost of funds to make those loans goes up. So this tax-free funding source, which allows us to be able to offer those typically below market, with 40-year low interest rate environment, sometimes that hasn't been the case most recently, but currently we are below market, and that is how we're able to offer those below market interest rate home loans. Did I get that covered?
Yes,
okay?
Yes, you did.
Thank
Yes.
Further questions?
Much more precisely than I did.
Representative Collins.
This is probably for our administrator. On our impact sheet here on the bottom, Jim, it says that this Memorial 6 is similar to the Senate Memorial in 2003.
Yes.
Could you give us what are the distinctions or the differences?
We, Madam Chair, members, as your staff, this is a committee-sponsored measure. When we asked for them to draft it, we went through and looked at some of the whereases and changed the whereases. The therefores, which is what we want Congress to do, is identical.
Okay. So, but from 2003, we didn't get home loans, you know, supported by the bill in 2003.
The measure in 2003 didn't have its intended effect.
Okay. Right. And so we're taking care of that.
Again. At this time...
Madam Chair, Representative Cobb, if I may, one of the distinctions in the bill is that this bill also includes Operation Iraqi Freedom and Afghanistan, so it was updated to include those conflicts. This bill, or a similar bill, has been introduced and passed previously. And additionally, a bill in Congress has been introduced to change the Internal Revenue Code. Those efforts have been underway for probably about 15 years now, and unfortunately, we keep running up against it not happening. However, I do believe that the House Joint Memorial is important and will have an impact, and we're hoping with the focus on veterans this time that it will be the focus that's needed. And in the past, some of the issues with the bill in Congress has been the funding caps, how much the cost of the bill, and that has been reduced. There are 5 states that make home loans to veterans: Alaska, Oregon, California, Wisconsin, and Texas, and all 5 of those states, we have conference calls, we work together, and their delegations are also being supportive as well. And so we continue the effort. We've all reduced the amount of the funding cap that will reduce the cost of the bill. So,
well, thanks for getting me up to speed.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
There are only 5 states out of 50 that give home loans to veterans.
Madam Chair, that is correct. Well, only 5 states offer.
Unbelievably disgusting.
We're very proud to be one of those 5 states that are offering home loans.
And praise God we live in a state that does.
And Madam Chair, that's one of the issues that is very concerning. If the ability for this state or any state goes away to be able to make a home loan, that is a veteran's benefit that is gone. And we all know that when things disappear, they typically do not come back, and you see other benefits or other programs follow and also disappear. So as an advocate for veterans, we can't stand by and just watch a veteran's benefit go away.
We can't stand by because we can't stand it, right?
Madam
Chair. We can't stand to let something like this happen. I hope that we will ask for our federal delegation to give us a report on why they can't get this passed, and maybe we need to make some changes in Congress. But would you ask our 2 senators and our 5 congressional members, Mr. Stembridge, to tell us who we need to lobby to get this most appropriate and prudent home loan program changed for the benefit of all our veterans?
And Madam Chair, I'm sure that they will welcome your support. They are always co-sponsors of the bill. Oregon gets its entire congressional delegation, and we're really proud to be able to do that. And it certainly creates a challenge, or presents a challenge, for our other 4 state home loan partners in doing the same in their states.
Well, we can certainly expect to get some input, so we'll know who in Congress is not supporting this activity, and we can go after them with full force. We'll get our warriors after them. Okay, sorry, Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paula, just out of curiosity, could you tell us what other states offer the Veterans Home Loan Program?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, the 5 states, Oregon, Alaska, California, Wisconsin, and Texas. And while it's only five states, there are some pretty large states relative to veterans population. In fact, those five states combined represent 20% of the veteran population in the country.
My goodness.
So 80% of our veterans do not have this benefit in our nation.
I have to flip it around.
That is correct. Not a state home loan.
Madam Chair.
Distasteful, bad, awful. Representative Bruin, I can't think of more words.
Keep going. Paul, is there any evidence that those five states attract more veterans when they retire based on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bruin, I'm not sure that that's what attracts them to those states. California, Texas, sometimes those are retirement states. Even Oregon, we have a pretty high retirement population. But whether that's exactly what draws them there or not, I don't know that.
We discussed it last
time, too.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Could you get us, or either Jim or you, I noticed you attached the bills from the 108th Congress, which expired last year. I assume there are new versions in the U.S. House and Senate that relate to this. The bills we've got here are the previous year ones. Maybe we could just get the updated ones. I assume it's the exact same tech, but probably has a different bill number in Congress this year.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, we will get that to you. We're expecting that bill to be dropped at any time, one on the House and one on the Senate side, and we'll make sure that we get a copy to this committee.
I gave them this package.
Good point, Representative.
Okay. We're probably, Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, we're probably even more anxious than you are to see that bill and have it in our hands, but we will definitely share it when we get it.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's appropriate for this legislature to continue to nag Congress to do its duty.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, absolutely, without doubt.
It's going to take buses, I keep telling you. Buses from all the states to Washington to get, if it's taken 15 years.
Congress has moved slowly.
We've said that, but that is, that's slower than a snail.
Chairman Nelson. I would usually do this in a sidebar, but that moves slower than education.
Representative Kahn.
That's true. We used to take like 5 years.
All right. Any other questions? I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Joint Memorial 6 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 6. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
I move that we send House Joint Memorial 6 to the floor with a, what is the proper phrase?
Do adopt
recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved that we move House Joint Memorial 6 to the floor with a do adopt connotation.
Recommendation.
Is there any discussion? If not, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Kahn.
Aye. Chair Nelson.
Aye. Well, that was a unanimous vote, and would you want to carry this bill, Representative Barnhart?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that will be the case. I will now close the work session on the House Joint Memorial 6, and thank you for that unanimous vote on behalf of our veterans. I will now open a public hearing on House Bill 516.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2516 qualifies the Oregon Veterans Home for checkoff contributions listed on the Oregon personal income tax returns. It deletes the requirement for 10,000 signatures in order to qualify.
Thank you very much. I'll call Major General Walter Cruz. Former. What am I doing? Master Sergeant, sorry.
You demoted him at first.
General Austin, I apologize for this. I only did that because earlier he had told me that I could just simply call him Mister, and I just thought I would throw that in. Welcome, Mr. Kirk.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Walter Cruz. I'm a Master Sergeant, United States Air Force, retired, and the Oregon Legislative Representative for the Noncommissioned Officers Association, NCOA, and the current spokesperson of the United Veterans Groups of Oregon, UVGO, and the chairman of the Legislative Subcommittee of the Governor's Advisory Council to the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I wish to thank the chairman and committee members for this hearing on House Bill 2516. The purpose of this bill is to eliminate the requirement of collecting signatures when it comes time for reauthorizing the Oregon Veterans Home for receiving tax refund charitable donations. This is desired as the Oregon Veterans Home, being a quasi-state operation, does not come under the rules of the Internal Revenue Service Code 501c3 for public benefit organization. All other requirements would remain in place. The benefits of this program is best illustrated by the donations received for tax year 2002. The home received $9,282. In tax year 2003, the amount was $13,210 for a grand total of $22,492. Of course, it's hoped that the 2004 tax year will be even greater in donations. We support this change in the law to allow the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dells to continue accepting funds via the Oregon Income Tax Refund Charitable Donations. And funding of the home is a worthy cause, and this would allow money from the charitable checkoff funds to be available for continued operation of the Oregon Veterans Home. The NCOA, Noncommissioned Officers Association, I'm sorry, you don't like acronyms.
We'll accept your money, though. Just long as
yes,
you may continue to use those acronyms.
I already owe you a dollar. I guess
we're keeping count, Mr. Cruz, for the Veterans Fund. Okay.
And the United Veterans Groups of Oregon, I respectfully request that House Bill 2516 be sent out with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions from the committee? Okay, I'll call Paula Brown.
Excuse me,
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sure as a retired general, you've got plenty of money to pay off.
New money.
Maybe you can answer, or maybe Mr. Sembridge can answer. Are there other, of the other entities that qualify for the charitable checkoff, do all of them currently have to get the signatures?
Yes.
Periodically. So this would set the Veterans Home in a specific category by itself.
Yes.
No. We'll call Mr. McDonald. Would you come forward and let me mediate this question and answer? Oh, I should have called.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I just happen to be the chairman of the Mr. McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. I just happen to be the chairman of the Charitable Checkoff Committee.
Didn't know
there are three that are legislatively into the charitable checkoff, and those top three do not have to get the 10,000 signatures. All others do.
Which three are they, Mr. McDonald?
Oh, boy. I'm sorry, madam, offhand. I just... One deals with non-game animals. Non-game animals, child abuse prevention, and Alzheimer's. Those three are dictated by the legislature to be in there, and they are on the tax form.
Would you say that the non-game...
Non-game...
Child abuse and...
Wildlife fund... The child abuse prevention and Alzheimer's research. They are not required to have the 10,000 signatures. All others in the charitable checkoff are required to have the 10,000 signatures. And the veterans in the charitable checkoff are a little different than the others in that they're partly a state entity, and the others are all private 301C organizations.
501C,
I believe it is.
C3.
But you have
questions? Let's ask Paul Brown to come forward and join these fine gentlemen, please. Could you give us some input from the Department of Veteran Affairs?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to present my testimony now.
Thank you.
I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm Paula Brown.
Good.
I'm pleased to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 2516. When Oregonians file their Oregon individual tax returns and they find themselves entitled to a refund, they currently have the opportunity to make a donation of a portion or all of a tax refund to which they are entitled. So if they've got a tax refund coming back to them, they can choose to donate it to the Oregon Veterans Home.
Thank you.
When Oregonians choose to make such a donation to the Oregon Veterans Home, which is a state-owned facility, whether that's through charitable checkoff or other methods, they're actually donating to their Veterans Home since it's a state-owned facility. Those donations come for a number of reasons. It may be that they're paying tribute to a loved one. They may be honoring a friend. And sometimes it's because they don't even know who the veteran is. But they know that those are veterans who have kept their freedom intact, their liberty safe, and their rights preserved. So that's certainly one of the reasons why sometimes people make those kinds of donations without any affiliation with a veteran. In Oregon, we're currently seeing a great support of our military service members, veterans, and their families. Such support has certainly been demonstrated by this committee, by each of you as a member of the committee, I'm sure by each of you as representatives within your districts, and probably also on personal levels that many of us are unaware of. House Bill 2516 really presents another opportunity to lend your support, eliminating the requirement that the 10,000 signatures be collected for the Oregon Veterans Home to be listed in the tax instruction booklet. Really does three things, which I've bulleted on the back page of the testimony that I've presented. First, it pays tribute to service members, veterans, and their families for their sacrifices for the precious freedoms that we enjoy today. Second, it communicates that Oregonians need not gather 10,000 signatures to be able to make a donation to their own home. And it also really invests hundreds of volunteer hours in activities to assist veterans. And my thinking on that one is that those people who are out volunteering those hours to collect those signatures are still going to volunteer those hours. They simply won't be spending that time collecting signatures. They'll be doing something else because they're committed volunteers to veterans. So, and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is grateful for every donation that the Oregon Veterans Home receives. So on behalf of the department, it's certainly my pleasure to testify in support of House Bill 2516, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Paula. We had testimony last committee meeting by the director of the home, and I personally have visited it. I think it's an exceptional facility. And Director Jim Willis of the Veterans Affairs Department says, you know, it's in the black, and we can be proud of that operation. You know, it's awfully hard to make it nowadays. So I can't imagine why we would require more and more service, you know, from our veterans and their families, you know, when we really owe this to them. Why they'd have to be getting signatures is unbelievable to me, but so are lots of things impacting our veterans. So are there any questions to these individuals? Thank you very much for your testimony. I do need to tell the committee we do have another similar bill that we'll also be looking at, and also this measure, of course, would have to go to the Revenue Department. I don't know why.
Revenue Committee.
Not Department. I have no clue why, but... Anyway,
Madam Chair, I just might suggest it has to do with the personal income tax form, and so that's why it would probably go to the Committee on Revenue.
Thank you. You've contributed greatly today.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the on the tax form are only the top three. The rest are in the tax booklet, listed in the tax booklet.
And why is that?
Because there's no room on the form, ma'am.
Well, why don't we change the form?
Well,
so practical.
We tried to get it changed in the Charitable Checkoff Commission, and we were told there was
bill.
No room.
Let's add that to this bill. Let's do something prudent on behalf of the state and the people and the veterans. All right. I will now close. If there's no further testimony, thank you so much for your support. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2516, and if there's no further testimony, thank you for being here, and the meeting is adjourned.
Wow.